Welcome to the Catastrophic Comeback Podcast with American injury lawyer Clark Speaks, helping you find hope, purpose, and joy after a catastrophic injury.
Hi, welcome to Catastrophic Comeback. I'm Clark Speaks, and really excited today to have Parker Byrd join us. For those of you who don't know about this story, this is pretty phenomenal. So we're excited to hear about it. Welcome, Parker. Thank you for being here.
And thanks for having me, man. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So talk to me a little bit about before this accident that's been a big part of your life. Where are you from? Tell me about growing up. What did you like to do? What were the big things that you were involved in as a kid?
Yeah, so I'm from a little place called Laurinburg, North Carolina. It's very southeast part of the state. And growing up, I mean, I have a mom, dad, and two younger sisters, and we're all extremely close. But baseball was a big part of our family just because I was playing basically every weekend, and my sisters were going on the road to my tournaments. And so we really lived for baseball. And both my parents went to East Carolina University. And I got an offer from there in my ninth grade year and committed right on the spot because that's where I wanted to go, just living my family's legacy, and everything was going good. So I committed very early on, and so baseball's been a huge part of our lives.
So it seems like baseball at a high school and college level, North Carolina is like the mecca of baseball. Why is that?
I'm not quite sure. I just think good weather, mostly year round, have good facilities in the area. And I think it's just a sport that naturally draws kids in this area from a very young age. And families kind of prioritize it with travel ball and rec ball. So maybe just the way the families view baseball. But I don't know. It's just, I guess, natural for kids of a young age to draw closer to baseball around this area.
Well, so I'm biased. I went to East Carolina as well. So I'm biased. And I think East Carolina is one of the best baseball programs in the country. But there's objective reasons to believe that, right?
Yeah, there's definitely the facts to prove that. I think we were ranked 10th this past week, had a rough weekend, dropped 2-3 at University of San Antonio in Texas. And so we're, I think, 15th now. But, I mean, still – top 15 in the nation for a D1 level is pretty phenomenal.
And this program has been in at that level for a long time. Is that consistent?
Yeah, we're consistent. Each year we're a top 25 team with just Coach Godwin and the coaching staff here and the fan base. It's pretty easy to get recruits just because if you came to a game here, you'd want to play here too. And so just the environment, the coaching staff, and just the culture here just provides each and every year, and we're blessed to have somewhere like this to call home and easily draws kids to commit here.
Well, so if you're committed in the ninth grade, you got to have a pretty unbelievable resume coming into the ninth grade. Is that fair?
Yeah, I was a good ball player. I was looking at one school and one school only. So as soon as they committed, that's kind of why I just pulled the trigger and went on with it. But I had other offers and other looks from other schools, but ECU is where I wanted to be.
What's the recruitment process look like for a high school? I mean, or I guess you were getting recruited in middle school, really. What does that look like for a kid? Everybody who, and most kids play some kind of sport growing up, right?
Right.
And when you're playing those sports, my kids played and all, and when you're kind of envisioning being recruited for college and playing in front of a college audience and a college crowd. And that seems like, you know, one of the most exciting things in the world. So what's that recruitment process like?
I mean, it's different for each sport, but I mean, it's exciting no matter what sport you play. I think now it's a little different from when I was getting recruited just because of then they put new laws in place to where you can't get recruited until maybe your junior year of baseball.
Right.
So it's definitely moved back up to what it was, but for a while there, I was young. I mean, we were committing in ninth grade. I mean, I was a very early commit in general, but we were committing, very young. And so, I mean, it was something you had to go through a process pretty early on, but now that it's back to junior year, I think it's probably a little bit better just because kids are more mature and, They don't pull the trigger as fast because I was kind of a rare case of where I actually knew where I wanted to go. But I mean, there's a lot of people out there that have no idea. And then once they get that first offer in ninth grade or so, they jump on it as soon as they do. And then they end up decommitting later on in their process. So it's definitely different, but it's exciting no matter what sport or what age you get recruited at.
Well, so when you get recruited to East Carolina in the ninth grade, your tell me what your vision is, your plan is at that point in time. Are you thinking, okay, this is, you know, what position did you play? What do you envision your future is going to look like at that point in time?
Yeah, I mean, starting very early on as a freshman was the goal, and that's what I thought was in plan. And I played really anywhere in the infield besides first base. I was very versatile. I played short, second, third, wherever you need me. But I kind of knew with the ages of the current players that shortstop position was going to be open once I got here. And so I was looking forward to playing short wherever that they wanted me at the time. And everything, yeah, was lined up great.
Then something happens in your life which is unexpected. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, so we were here for summer school in 2022. The freshmen here on the baseball team get summer school, just get acclimated to the new environment, to the coaching staff, to the new baseball program that they're in. So they came during summer school, everything was going great. And then we got a recruit mid-summer, which was really rare because, like I said, I committed ninth grade and the other guys that were here committed pretty early on too. So having a recruit kind of mid-summer going into your freshman year of college is very rare nowadays. And then so he came in and he was like, "Hey, my family has a river house in Bath, North Carolina, which is about 40 minutes away from Greenville. And we should go there one weekend. We have a boat, we have tubes, we should just go and have a great time." So, all right, sounds good. I just kind of blew him off for the rest of the summer. And then it was the last weekend of summer school. And he kept on and on. And he's like, "Hey, let's go this weekend to." Me and like four other teammates, all right, let's go, let's give it a shot. He said it's a great time, so let's go on down there. So that Friday after our morning 300s and workouts and all the hard work we did during the summer, we went down there just to hang out for the weekend. And Friday went great. And that Saturday morning, I was supposed to take one of the guys back to Greenville because he was supposed to help an elderly couple move some furniture. Well, he got a text that morning saying, "Hey, Miles, thanks for volunteering, but we don't really need your help anymore." So the guys were like, "Hey, let's just go back on too. We had a great time yesterday, so let's do it again." So we went back out. The first try went great. Me and Dixon Williams, one of my teammates, got on two first, and first try went good. Fell off, ended up getting back on because we had such a good time. And second ride driver was like, "Hey, I'm gonna try to throw you guys off a little bit quicker this time." So we're like, "All right, sounds good." So me and Dixon both ended up falling off the tube pretty quickly, hitting the water pretty hard. So we're like, "Hey, we gotta get back to this boat because we're in some pain right now." So we're swimming back to the boat, and I was ahead of Dixon at the time, and I was using the rope from the tube to help guide myself into the boat. And as I got within 10 yards or so from the boat, the driver put the boat in reverse, or it got knocked into reverse somehow, and ended up running me over with the boat, and the propeller hit both of my legs and my left hand as well.
Oh my goodness. What happened then? Was it, so I imagine, first of all, I've been on boats my whole life, and I can envision exactly the scenario that you're talking about, and it could have happened to any one of us on either side of this story. What happened next?
Yeah, so thankfully, right people at the right time. Miles Curley, the guy that I was supposed to take back to Greenville, he was at the end of the boat at the time, and he jumped in immediately because he had a friend back home in Florida die in a very similar way in my boating accident. So he knew that getting help was very urgent and that he needed to get me back onto the boat. So the help got me back onto the boat, and he was telling other guys to rip off their shirts and tie tourniquets around my legs. So they're doing that as they were trying to wave down other boats because our boat wasn't able to move due to the rope being caught in the propeller. So
Oh,
they're
okay.
waving down other boats, and first boat stopped, and they were like, they addressed some situation, and the boat was like, "Sorry, we can't really help. We have kids on the boat, and we don't want to expose them to the scene, but here's a first aid kit. Now, this isn't really going to help. His legs were far from a band-aid." So they continued to wave down other boats, and the second boat stopped. And on that boat was two couples. And the only reason they were going back in that day was because one of the couples had gotten into an argument, and They're like, hey, can you just take me back to the marina? We're kind of done for the day. We just want to go back home. So on the way back, they saw us and they stopped and they agreed to help. So they transported me onto that boat. And on that boat, one of the ladies was a nurse. So
Oh,
she
wow.
just tied more tourniquets around my legs with ropes that they had on their boat as they were transporting me to the marina there where there's an ambulance waiting on me. And then the ambulance took me to the local hospital in Washington, North Carolina, where there was a helicopter waiting on me to airlift me to ECU Health here in Greenville. So, and once I got here, they rushed me right into surgery. And that's where I began the first day of my 4 week stay here at ECU Health.
Wow. Okay, so in this podcast, we sort of spend some time talking about this moment when after some kind of event like this happens, then your family and doctors and nurses and medical people, and the first thing is just to rush to try to save your life and make sure that you're going to live, right?
Right.
At some point, that becomes stable. And then you go, okay, I'm going to live. And then at some point, all those people sort of leave, and you're there for the first time on your own in that room. Maybe that first night when after things subside a little bit, and you're sort of left, with your thoughts. And for you, you're envisioning before that playing baseball at a top 20 or top 10 school in the country. Lots of kids from that program go on to play in the Major League Baseball. You got your whole world sort of mapped out for you, and then something like this happens. What's going through your head that when in those first few moments that you're, or in those first few hours you're alone after something like this happens?
Luckily, I have a really good support system with my family. They were there really the whole way. And with the hospital rules at the time, only one person could be in the hospital room in ICU and two people per day. So I was kind of seeing my mom and dad over and over just because of the hospital rules. And they were there really all the time because, I mean, when something like this happens to your kid, you kind of drop your world. And so they were there just supporting me and letting me know that anything's possible. And I, at first, my accident happened on July 23rd. And at first, they didn't know where the static nerve was, but they were able to keep the bleeding stop. And then they found the static nerve a couple surgeries later. And they thought my leg was going to be fine, that both of my legs were going to heal up. And with some extensive rehab, I'd get back onto the field, get back with that top 20 program in the nation and be able to contribute. And things kind of went south around August 2nd, and my right foot became really pale and cold, which I was never able to move during these days. It just they thought it was just due to the swelling and the initial accident that it wasn't able to move at the time, but it'd come back and movement would be okay. But it was never able to move, and it became really pale and cold. And both of my parents have a medical background. My dad's a pediatrician, my mom's a nurse. They kind of knew that it wasn't very good at all. And so on August 4th, I came into my room that morning and said, hey, we have two options. We can either amputate your leg with low your knee, or we can continue this medicine that we have you on now, which isn't really working. And you'll basically end up dying, and your kidneys and liver will shut down, and you'll be dead. And so I was like, hey, let's cut it off and keep moving in life. So, I mean, there was definitely some moments where I was by myself and I kind of was very confused, I would say, and kind of confused on why it happened to me, what was really going on, and how my future would be, just because there has never been a Division I player to play with a prosthetic leg. So, especially after my amputation, there were some moments there where I was having doubt, I was having kind of just a lot of questions of how I was going to do life. But one night I was staying with my mom, and I told her, I was like, Mom, I don't think I'll ever be able to play baseball again. She's like, why you say that? And I was like, well, it's never been a Division I player to play with a prosthetic leg. And she always said without hesitation or question, she goes, well, it always has to be a first. Why can't it be you? So kind of from that moment on, I really had a positive outlook on it and realized that there does always have to be a first person. Why couldn't that be me?
Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.